Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm thrilled to have partnered with Mindful Chef in this second series of Food for Thought. Mindful Chef is all about convenience, quality, and balance, delivering simple, nutritious, and sustainably sourced fresh recipe boxes straight to your door. With dairy-free, gluten-free, and vegan recipes available, there is something for absolutely everybody. And what's more, for every meal sold, Mindful Chef donates a school meal to a child in need. You can save £20 across your first two boxes from Mindful Chef, plus get a free cookbook from the founders by heading to mindfulchef.com/foodforthought. Or if you use the code from this podcast, Food for Thought, when you order your first box, that will be applied. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you with all the evidence-based advice you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, a registered nutritionist, master practitioner, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode of this second series, I'll be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authorities in the world of well-being, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. The list of taboos that affects a woman's health is endless, and let's be honest, most women have no idea what's going on down there. Culturally and personally, no body part inspires so much concern and confusion. It's time to put an end to these taboos and talk openly about women's health, sex, pain, trauma, birth, motherhood, menstruation, menopause, and simply being a woman. Helping us say goodbye to the myths and misconceptions surrounding the female anatomy is Dr. Anita Mitra, who's an NHS doctor working in obstetrics and gynaecology. Hello, Anita.
Hi.
Thank you for coming on today. There is a lot to cover.
It's no problem. Thanks for having me, but I think that we can nail it. Let's do it.
Excellent. Well, I know a lot of people feel very uncomfortable about things down there, and it's not uncommon or, let's say, embarrassing as people would think, is it? So why do you think so many women don't really talk openly about their female health?
Well, I think one of the reasons is that it's not something that as a society we're used to talking about, but it definitely needs to be. It's something that is always quite whispered about. I think that lack of understanding means people don't feel comfortable with talking about it. Something I come across quite a lot in my practice is people not knowing what to call particular parts of their body.
Of course.
So it's very difficult to go and talk to a doctor when you don't really know what to call the area where you have a problem. The other thing is lots of the words that we use are a little bit tricky to say. Like,
yes,
we were just saying
are.
Off air, like, how do you say the word obstetrics?
Yeah. So I think I said instead of ob.
Exactly. And, you know, they are kind of unusual words, and things like, you know, the word estrogen, like it's a very, the way it's written, like how do you pronounce it? So I think the terminology really puts people off.
Yeah.
But I think the main thing is that we just are maybe brought up to think that periods and vaginas and all that kind of thing are dirty and disgusting, and we don't want to talk about them. And so that's really one of my main missions, is to really bust that taboo, because if people don't feel they can talk about things, then they suffer with problems for a lot longer. And one of the worst parts of my job really is seeing people who have been suffering for years, if not decades, with problems, not understanding what's going on. So highly anxious, understandably. But just, you know, suffering with a problem that could actually be quite simple for us to help them with and sort out. So I think that's for me, the main reason why we need to get better at talking about it.
Well, that's why we're so lucky to have people like you out there championing, especially this area that you've dedicated your life to studying. And I think men are also particularly shy, aren't they, when it comes to talking about this stuff. So do you think it's important for them to feel comfortable when discussing this too?
Yeah, massively. I think that's, yeah, because we're all surrounded by men, and if there's something that's bothering us, then even if you don't say what it is, then if someone knows you very well, they'll know that there's something bothering you.
Yeah.
And I think we've always, all of us have been in that situation where someone we're very close to, there's something on their mind, and you're like, come on, tell me what it is. And so if it's something that you already feel awkward talking about, and you know is going to make that other person feel awkward, then that's really hard. And I think there are a lot of men who probably do struggle with the conditions that their wives, girlfriends, partners, mothers, sisters are going through, because they don't understand them, so it becomes more difficult to support them. And I don't blame men for that at all. I think, again, it's lack of information and understanding. And I remember when we learned about periods at school. So I went to a very kind of like standard sort of comprehensive school in the Midlands. It was not particularly like old fashioned. It wasn't particularly like out there, but, you know, I would say it's very like middle of the road.
Yeah.
And I remember all the boys being taken out when we had chat about periods.
Yeah, they went in another room.
So I just wonder what all the boys who I went to school with, what do they think about periods? So if any of you can tell me, please get in touch. I'd love to know.
It's really interesting. Talking of periods, I mean, one thing that I feel I really should share, and it's something I see a lot in my clinic, is when people lose their periods, and the term that I suppose the medical term is amenorrhea, isn't it? So how common is this, and what are the causes that you would attribute to this?
So I think it's really hard to put a figure on rates of amenorrhea. So amenorrhea means not having a period for 3 or 6 months, depending on where you read. Now, in the world, the most common reason for amenorrhea is pregnancy.
Yes,
but
of course.
For a lot of people who are not having periods, there are plenty of other reasons. Now, the first thing I want to say is that if you are on certain kinds of contraception, such as, for example, the progesterone-only pill, which is the one you take for 28 days and then don't have a break, and also the Mirena coil in particular, implant and the injection, they can all cause amenorrhea, so your periods can stop. And that is not unhealthy. That is kind of one of the mechanisms of how they work. So when we're talking about amenorrhea, we're talking about people who are not using those kind of contraception. And so the commonest reasons I see for people not having periods would be polycystic ovarian syndrome, PCOS, which I know we're going to talk about in a little bit. But there's also this massive group of women, and I'm seeing so much, particularly people who contact me on social media, and they're not having their periods because essentially because of the way they live their lifestyles. And I don't blame any of these women for this, because there isn't really much awareness for how it can come about. But the main things I'm seeing are overtraining.
Oh, I see that all the time.
Undereating.
Particularly
if you're training really hard. You know, we were just talking about like Barry's boot camp, for example. Lots of these like boot
camp
classes.
I've never been to a Barry's boot camp, Anita. That's something that may perhaps need to change. I don't know.
But, you know, a lot of these classes, you can burn, well, they say up to like 1,000 calories in a session. So if you're doing that, you know, even once, twice a week, you've got to eat quite a lot.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is just chronic stress. And also with that tends to go, you know, poor sleep. They are the real, you know, the real period stoppers, I would say. And the reason that happens is for a couple of reasons. So if you're super, super stressed, you're going to be make lots of cortisol, which is the stress hormone. And I think probably most of your listeners have heard of that. And
we touch
on
that a lot.
It's made from the same compounds as your female hormones. Okay. So your estrogen and progesterone, it's all along the same steroid pathway, we call it. And so if your body has to make all this cortisol, it would rather do that at the expense of your female hormones, because it likes you to make female hormones, but it needs you to make cortisol, because
survival
is essential, what keeps you alive. Exactly. The other thing, you know, if you're chronically deprived of energy, then again, you won't be able to make the goods. If you're not putting those things into your body, you're not making the goods. And also your body wants to protect you in a way.
Yes.
So if it knows that you are a starved, stressed out woman who would not be able to look after a child, because essentially we're talking now about what your body is evolutionary programmed to do.
Why would it let you get pregnant or have a period?
Exactly. Yeah. So we could talk about all the molecular mechanisms like all day and probably the rest of the week. I mean, but that is the reason.
Yeah, I think definitely what you've touched on there in terms of over-exercising, under-eating, it is becoming a big problem. I find in the UK there's lots of big divides and we forget about the middle ground a lot. We think of overeating, we think of under-eating. But what about dietary lifestyle choices? A lot of people, I'm not saying this is correct, but claim that veganism has an impact on their periods. Is that a myth that you can bust or is that true?
No, it's something that I have seen. I've seen, and I think people think I'm like this vegan hater, and I'm absolutely not, because there are plenty of really responsible vegans out there.
This is not about ethical things, guys listening. Yeah. This is scientific this fact is, we're discussing.
This is geeky science.
Yeah.
So the thing about veganism and also lots of kind of extreme changes in diet, so not even extreme diets but just where you extremely change what you're doing, can really make your body deplete in certain nutrients. But also a lot of people have been trying veganism over the last few months after sort of Veganua and everything like that, and a lot of people are like saying, God, I didn't realize how much you need to eat. So that's the
volume
thing.
Of food.
The
is
volume.
Huge.
So you can actually, without becoming necessarily nutrient deplete from veganism, you can actually be under eating and not realizing it. And I'm sure you probably see that quite a lot.
All the time.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the thing is, you know, if you are cutting out huge food groups, you will become deficient in quite a lot of nutrients.
Of
and
course.
So, one thing I'm particularly seeing a lot is people who are becoming hypothyroid.
Okay.
Because they're not having dairy, because that is the main source of iodine in our Western diets.
Yes.
And so if, you know, you don't have to be vegan. Lots of people will have plant-based milks these days, soy milks, those
kind
of things.
But the problem is they're not fortified with iodine.
Exactly. So you're not getting the iodine. And your thyroid also plays a role, not just in your metabolism and how your body works in general, but also it has an interplay with your female hormones. So I think it's really important to understand that your female hormones don't work in isolation.
No.
All of your body's hormones are all working together. So your insulin will have an impact, your thyroid, you know, all these hormones are having an interplay.
I'm
because
so
it's
glad
all
you
a very
you
know, intricate system that all you know, plays together.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I'm seeing, not just in people who are necessarily becoming vegans, but then also, you know, you can become deficient in B12 particularly.
Oh, there's so many nutrient deficiencies, aren't there? And like you said, with iodine, so if people listen, you get it in dairy sources and fish. So actually, if you do make a drastic change, and it also affects your cognitive development. So thyroid, cognition, all these types of things are really important. And you touched on polycystic ovarian syndrome as well. You started with that, and could you kind of explain what it is and what are the main implications of it? Because I know it affects a lot more people than we realise.
So polycystic ovarian syndrome is a syndrome. So that means that it's a collection of symptoms and it's different in different people. So if you have two friends who have polycystic ovarian syndrome, it can be a completely different sort of mechanism that's going on that's driving it. But there are some cardinal symptoms. So the first thing is polycystic ovaries on an ultrasound scan. So your ovaries will make little cysts. That's how they get the eggs out of the ovary every month.
Yeah.
You develop a cyst and it bursts and the egg pops out.
Ooh,
and then
it's
the
not
fallopian
nice visual.
Tube picks it up. I know, it sounds a bit worse than it is. It's happening all the time. It could be happening to you right now.
Yeah. I just don't know. Don't feel it.
But when you have PCOS, your ovulation isn't working in the right way, but your ovary is so desperately trying to pop an egg out, so it makes lots of these cysts. So people call it lazy ovaries. Your ovary is nothing but lazy. It is trying so hard, and that's where you get all the cysts. But having cysts on its own is not PCOS. Okay, lots of people will have polycystic ovaries but won't have any of the other features. So now you're going to ask me, what are the other features?
Yeah.
Well,
here we go.
Either absent or irregular periods.
Yeah.
So amenorrhea, no periods, or oligomenorrhea, so irregular, infrequent periods. And that's because you're not ovulating, so your body's not kind of working in your normal kind of like classic 28-day
cycle. And what would you classify as irregular?
So that's where you really can't find any rhyme or reason to your cycle. And so we say anything between 21 and 35 days is normal. So that's 7 days either side of that 28-day cycle. And so if you know that your period normally comes within kind of like maybe your cycle 1 month is 25 days and the next day it's 32, sorry, the next month it's 32, that would be, you know, a pretty regular cycle. But if you're talking about having a period maybe every 3 months and then you don't get one for 6 months, that would be oligomenorrhea.
Okay.
And so the other thing is signs of having excess male hormones. So testosterone is the predominant one. Yeah. So you can have acne, very oily skin, hirsutism, where you've got sort of excess facial hair, and also male pattern baldness. They tend to be the cardinal symptoms and signs. And so the reason you get polycystic ovaries in about 70% of people is insulin resistance.
Which is why perhaps it's linked to a carbohydrate diet. You can discuss that too.
Yeah, exactly. But what happens is when your body becomes less sensitive to insulin, so you're not diabetic, but you have, you know, insulin resistance, you have to make more of it. And when you make lots of insulin, it makes your ovaries turn estrogen into testosterone, so the male hormone.
Right.
And then you're not going to ovulate. And then you get all those kind of symptoms that we talked about.
Right, okay.
And so it can be a massive problem for a lot of women because obviously having these symptoms are not nice. And then there is a potential that if you're not ovulating, it might cause problems in the future with pregnancy. If you have PCOS, though, I must stress, you have to use contraception. It doesn't mean that you're not going to get pregnant, because we see plenty of people who have PCOS and get pregnant with no problems. But it is something that is a potential problem, and that's why I'm really keen on getting people to kind of recognise it, because you need to sort these things out in advance of when you maybe want to get pregnant.
Of course, but how do they sort it out? So I'm often asked, the questions I typically get are diets for PCOS, you know, what can people do?
Yeah. So you see lots of these kinds of articles, the top five foods for PCOS.
I know.
Oh, gosh.
You've probably been asked to contribute to so many.
So the first thing I'd say is there is no quick fix.
Yeah.
Okay. And the idea about PCOS is sorting out your lifestyle so that you make consistent changes that are sustainable. It's not about super extreme diets and, you know, real kind of like crash, you know, like hacks and fixes.
Yeah.
So
it's never the answer.
Lots of people promote a ketogenic diet, for example. Okay. So the science behind it is obviously that if you are insulin resistant or quite insensitive, then by having fewer carbs, then you are going to help the sort of metabolism that's going on. The only thing I would say is that if you're on a proper ketogenic diet where you're having maybe 20 grams of carbs per day.
A lack of fiber there.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. So fiber is super, super important because there are studies that have shown that women with, women who have PCOS have less fiber intake.
Yeah.
And so why is that important? Well, you get rid of estrogen through your bowels. So through a circulation of the estrogen via the liver, that gets excreted into your stool. So if you're not having lots of fiber, you're not able to do those chemical processes, and then you're not going to poo out your excess estrogen, and it all recirculates. And then if you've got loads of estrogen and you've got loads of insulin, then you're going to be making even more testosterone. And so you can see it's quite a vicious cycle.
It is. And I think that's why the BDAs, the British Dietetic Association, they actually recommend low GI type foods, so glycemic index, rather than doing something that extreme.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you've got to really kind of find something that's going to work for you with lots of fiber, lots of fruit and veggies, because remember that ovulation itself is just one of the processes that your body needs to do.
Of course, it
needs so many micronutrients, lots of, you know, vitamins and minerals and all sorts of things that you can't get through having a very extreme diet.
Because you discuss in your book, you've got things like vitamin D, and you explain the importance of that, and maybe minimizing caffeine and alcohol as well.
Exactly. So I mean, okay. Now I sound really boring, but
no, go for it.
The thing is that, okay, I love coffee.
Yes.
So
I've had a massive coffee this morning.
Okay. Enjoy.
That's the thing. So I enjoy one or two really good coffees per day.
Anita is like blushing right now when we're talking about this, but it's fine. Go for it, babe.
And I don't have any coffee after sort of midday, 1, maybe 2 o'clock if I'm going to be doing a really long shift or I'm going to finish at 9.
Yes.
And the reason mainly for me is that it does interfere with your sleep a lot. So it takes, the half-life of caffeine is 6 hours. So if I had a coffee at 6 o'clock, if I'm at work still, then at midnight, that's like drinking half a cup of coffee.
Pretty much.
I'm never going to do that.
I know. I mean, guys, that's 12 hours in total. Think about this.
Exactly. And so, I mean, alcohol also will interfere with your sleep. It dehydrates you and it can have a stimulant effect at a quite a low level. So you can, there's this quite interesting sort of bell-shaped curve with alcohol where you're kind of like the alcohol level's going up and you're getting excited.
Yeah.
And then you get to a peak and it's a sedative.
Yeah.
So then you're like, okay, it's time to go home. Then you go home, or maybe you're already at home, I don't know. You go to bed and then you go to sleep. And then as your alcohol level comes down on the other side of the bell, it starts to stimulate you again. And that's why you often have really bad sleep after you've had a big night.
Yeah,
exactly. But so why am I harping on about sleep with PCOS? Well, lack of sleep will promote insulin resistance.
Yeah.
And this is in all of us.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's some interesting studies that have looked at sleep deprivation.
Okay.
And if you sleep one night, 4 hours, you can decrease your insulin sensitivity by 25%. And so this is why we have to really remember that all our hormones are playing into our female hormones. It's all one huge system. Nothing works in isolation.
And if we go back in the olden days where we weren't working these long hours to the same degree and things, we would be getting more sleep. And how does that tie in to another condition known as endometriosis? Could you quickly explain what endometriosis is as well? Is that similar with food?
Well, there is some interesting data about endometriosis. And again, something I get asked about a lot with, in terms of diets and things. So endometriosis is when the cells that line the womb, which are called, so that's called the endometrium, that layer.
Yeah.
Cells like that are found outside of the womb. So on the skin of the pelvis. So on, they can be on your ovaries, on your bowel, bladder. In rare cases, they can even be in the lung.
Oh, wow.
And your hormones are in your bloodstream. So wherever these cells are, they react in the same way as they would if they were in the womb. So they they thicken up throughout the month. And then when you have your period, your line, the lining of your womb would shed. So the same thing happens to those cells. So you kind of have a little bit of bleeding and shedding into the tummy. And that is very, very irritant. So blood is incredibly irritant.
Which is the pain people experience.
Exactly. But it's not just painful periods. So you eventually will get scar tissue because that blood has nowhere to go. It causes inflammation, irritation, and you get sort of, scar tissue developing and little deposits.
Yeah.
And so we can see this when we operate on people. We often do keyhole surgery for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so if it's on your bowel, it might cause really bad pain when you go to the toilet to have your bowels open. Also when you're passing urine, if it's on your bladder. But just generally, everything in your tummy should be moving around. So all your organs kind of like slide over one another. And if it all gets stuck, then that will just cause pain. And in particular, it can cause really bad pain when you have sex.
Well, that's what I've heard as well. I actually have a few friends with this condition. They actually, it got really sad because they avoided having sex with their partner for a while.
Exactly.
Is there anything people can do?
Well, again, I think that's one of the reasons why we need to educate men. And just kind of having an awareness that it's not something that's in your head. It doesn't mean that you don't like sex, because I see a lot of people who are really worried that there's something sort of physically wrong with them into, there is something kind of inside.
But they don't know.
And I think it's being able to have that communication with your partner that, you know, maybe something's uncomfortable, maybe certain times of the month it might be more uncomfortable. Avoiding positions that you find
feel
pain even worse. So I think really it's communication is really the key there.
100%. And I mean, moving on to the kind of that area and talking of things that I know a lot of people are speaking about today. So a lot of people are talking about gut health, but I want to talk about the vaginal microbiome, which I know in your PhD you focused on a lot. I mean, could you explain this is it vaginal brain axes? Is that how it works?
Yeah. So, well, I think this is kind of something I made up, but it is a thing.
Great. Well, go you. I'm liking this thing.
So, yeah, again, this is kind of like me wanting to basically harp on about how everything is connected.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so my PhD, a lot of it I focused on the vaginal microbiome. Mm. And so that's just the good, healthy bacteria that lives in our vagina, yeah, just like in our gut.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is one of the reasons why you shouldn't clean inside your vagina. You shouldn't use douches or anything like that.
Yeah. And, well, goop, isn't it? Places that promote these
God,
bizarre
my blood
tools.
Pressure is going up.
And we'll pretend I never brought that topic up. So please continue to tell us, don't use these devices.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't want to wash inside your vagina because you've got a specific kind of bacteria there called lactobacillus, and it's a really, really good healthy bacteria. And what it does is it makes lots of chemicals and metabolites that protect us.
Mm.
Okay, so they stop things like candida growing, so that's what causes thrush.
Yeah,
and also stops the growth of bacteria that can overgrow and cause something called bacterial vaginosis.
Yeah.
And so it's quite interesting, though, because, again, we think of our vaginas not being linked to anything.
Yeah.
There is actually some evidence to show that your gut microbiome has an impact on the structure of your vaginal microbiome.
Oh.
And so,
of course, you pass on to your baby if someone has a baby, don't they? They're kind of bacteria.
Yeah, so that's where we think a lot of the bacteria comes from in terms of sort of establishing that microbiome. But it's really interesting. So I touched on something called bacterial vaginosis.
Yeah.
And so that's where you get quite irritating discharge. It can be quite foul smelling and just really recurrent. So you can get bouts of it. It'll come and go, come and go.
Gosh.
And it's really interesting patient that I had once.
Okay.
And she was like, I just need to get rid of this.
Yeah.
And we were chatting, and she was a banker in London and super busy and super stressed, didn't really sleep, liked a few crafty fags when she went out for drinks after work. Then she said to me, you know what's really weird? But when I go to Korea, which is where she was from, she said, I go home and it totally goes away.
Oh.
Yeah. And I asked her, okay, so what actually changes when you go to Korea? And she said, well, my mum doesn't know that I smoke, so I don't smoke anymore.
Oh, interesting.
And then I just chill out, I sleep loads, I don't, you know, I don't have to answer any work emails or anything like that. And also my grandma makes this sort of soup, and it was like a fermented soup.
Yeah.
I thought, gosh, that's really interesting because what she's done there is basically
changed her whole lifestyle.
Changed her whole lifestyle, and it's changed a symptom that you would never associate with
diet,
any of those
sleep,
things.
Relaxation.
Exactly.
Wow.
So I tried to ask her for the recipe for the soup,
no,
but she's like,
so.
No, it's like an ancient recipe that cannot be given.
Yeah.
But so that's why it's so important to look after your entire health. And I mean, there's not tons of studies out there at the moment looking at the connection between the gut and the vaginal microbiome, but I think they will be coming.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can, some of the bacteria in the vagina actually seeds from the rectum. There are some studies to show that. So that's why I think we really need to be thinking about our gut health.
Definitely.
In relation to our vaginal health as well.
It's great. I mean, you mentioned lactobacillus, and that's something that you actually find in Greek yogurt as well, which is very interesting. So there you go, everyone listening.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And I know something that affects everybody definitely listening would be painful periods.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I get excruciating period cramps personally. The mood swings are there. The food cravings are there. There seems to be a growing movement on people using things like organic tampons instead, thinking this has an impact, changing their diet. What's actually going on?
Okay. So first of all, I would just sort of reassure people that it is normal to get a little bit of pain with your period, and it's because your womb is squeezing to get the blood out, basically. So normally the first day or two might be a bit uncomfortable, and using something like paracetamol, ibuprofen, those kind of things are totally safe to do. But if you're like clock watching thinking, my god, when do I get to take that next one, that might be a sign that maybe your period is a bit too uncomfortable. Maybe you want to go and talk to your doctor. But yes, with regards to sort of tampons and things like that, I've had lots of people asking me about this because there are lots of organic tampon companies popping up. And I think it's great for people to have options.
Of course.
But I think that a lot of them can be a little bit oversold at the moment.
Yeah.
If you are wondering whether your tampon is causing you problems in terms of sort of irritation or you think it might be causing pain, by all means, try something different. And you need to give it a couple of months to see if it made a difference.
Of course.
Because remember, your periods can be different every month as well. Because depending on what's going on in life, if you have a super stressful month, that can actually cause you to get a more painful period.
I knew it. I guess that's what's happening to me. I knew it, Anita.
Yeah, exactly.
What about things like, so I like a moon cup.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thoughts on that sort of thing?
I think moon cups are great if you like them.
Yeah.
I have also tried them. I think they're great. I loved it when I went away for the weekend.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like,
difference.
I don't have to have this bag full of tampons. I've got a moon cup.
But I know.
Some months I just don't fancy using it and I can't quite work out why.
Yeah.
But I do think people are being slightly shamed into using moon cups. So if you, because you have to be quite cool with putting your fingers inside your
That's
vagina.
That's true. Yep.
And you have to be quite cool with the sight of blood. Because to be honest with you, I mean, I see litres of blood every day in my job. It's not something that's foreign to me.
No.
I was quite surprised, actually, the first time I used it.
It's fascinating to see how much blood you actually collect.
Exactly.
I found that really interesting. I was like, oh my goodness.
Now, top tip here is if you are going to try one, the first time you remove it, I would highly recommend doing it in the shower because you don't want to drop it everywhere.
No.
And, you know, I mean, that's what I did. Just out of interest, if anyone's wondering.
What about weight fluctuations? So I think, I mean, this is anecdotal, but I definitely put on 2 to 3 kilos around that time of month.
Mm-hmm.
Is that normal? I know a lot of people listening may experience more or less.
Definitely. You will notice weight fluctuations throughout the month. And so I generally don't weigh myself, but there are scales in the gym that I go to, and just for fun, I don't care how much I weigh anymore. There
no,
were
me
times
neither.
In my life when I probably
goodness.
Would, but I've weighed myself, and my god, it can be like 2 or 3 kilos, and like I'm quite small, so in terms of like proportion of my body weight, that's quite a lot.
Because you don't see it, but you can feel it.
It's insane. And so, yeah, there are reasons why you would put on weight throughout the month, and one of the main ones is water retention,
right?
Because our hormones will, you know, again, interact with other hormones that are related to water retention.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the reasons that you get a bit of water retention is because when you're pregnant, because remember, your body is every month trying to get pregnant you have a period. You need to increase your body fluid volume because when you have a baby, even the most sort of simple of deliveries, you will bleed, obviously.
Yeah.
And so your body needs to increase the fluid volume.
Fluid,
so that's one of the reasons why you get a bit of fluid retention, actually. So we could kind of say we should be a little bit grateful.
Yeah,
because
no,
if that happens, if we do get pregnant, then we do need it.
Yeah.
The other thing is that you can get quite bloated in terms of your bowel, because particularly progesterone will change the motility of your gut.
Mm.
So there are lots of reasons. So yeah, it is there, and it's not something that's in your head.
No.
Now, I've done some work with an amazing app called Moody Month, which if you want to track your sort of symptoms and how you feel, both mentally and physically, this is a really good
Moody
app.
Month.
Moody Month,
cool.
Yeah. So it's a period tracker.
Yeah.
It's not any kind of like contraceptive or anything like that. It's just an app where you work out where you are in your cycle and then you can track your moods and your symptoms, and it gives you a report, which is really cool if you want to be really geeky, and just helps you to work out if there is a if there is a kind of like a cycle, because sometimes if you can rationalize it, you can accept it a little bit more.
I agree
with
that. And for people that are maybe planning on getting pregnant, do you think that maybe delaying things, or because you're tracking and you think, oh, I've got my career or I've got financial things, will that have an overall impact on someone's ability or chance to conceive? We've got other factors here like age, and does that have an impact?
Yeah, so, well, we unfortunately, women's fertility does decline quicker than men with age.
Yeah,
and so
which
people...
sucks. Men have no idea.
I know. So people say that, you know, the fertility of the nation is decreasing. Mm. That's not true per se. Okay. Our fertility isn't decreasing, but we are choosing to have children later for all the reasons that you mentioned.
Yes.
So yes, unfortunately, the older you are, the less your fertility will be. So from about 32, 34, that's when it really starts to decline. But if you are around the age, which we both kind of are, it doesn't mean you have to freak out and stress.
No.
It does not mean that you are not going to be able to get pregnant.
Yes.
It is something that we have to remember. And I think it's important to remind people that unfortunately, we are not fertile forever.
Yeah.
And there's also a reason why our fertility decreases, because actually being pregnant puts a massive, massive strain on your body.
Mm.
It is a real workout for your body. And unfortunately, you know, we do see older women often, you know, who've had IVF, for example, having a lot more complications.
Yeah.
And that is one of the reasons why we shouldn't necessarily be really promoting delaying our fertility.
Okay.
I'm not saying everyone needs to rush out and get pregnant, but
just
I think
aware.
That, you know, you can push nature a little bit too far sometimes.
That's I think that's a very interesting point to raise. And going on the other end of the spectrum, I've had so many of my followers asking to learn more about the menopause.
Mm.
And I mean, it's also a taboo subject, what happens to our bodies at the other end of the spectrum. So
yeah, absolutely.
Could you talk us through those symptoms and what people can do maybe to help those symptoms?
Yeah. So the menopause is a kind of retrospective diagnosis.
Yeah.
So
okay,
you can say that you are menopausal when you've not had a period for 1 year.
Oh.
And so that average age for that in the UK is 51.
Mm-hmm.
It tends to be dictated slightly by when your mum went through the menopause. So if you're wondering, then that's a good way of kind of gauging it.
Mm.
So the time leading up to the menopause is called the perimenopause.
Yes.
And for some people, that never happens.
No,
they just don't
have any
symptoms.
Yeah.
But for other people, it can go on for months, even years.
Oh, wow.
You go through the menopause essentially because you run out of eggs.
Mm.
That's why. And so if you don't have those eggs to release, you're not getting that same hormonal
How
cycle.
How many eggs do we have?
Millions.
Millions, good.
So we have millions when we're born.
Okay.
And every month, the number will decrease.
They'll
sort of die off, and that's going on all through our lives.
Okay.
Interesting point, a lot of people asking me lately. If they are on contraception that stops you from ovulating, so for example, combined oral contraceptive pill, it won't delay when your menopause starts. It doesn't save your eggs because your eggs are still sort of dying off every month. That sounds really dramatic.
No.
Please don't freak out.
That's a good point to make.
It's all normal.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it won't, you can't sort of preserve your fertility in that way, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what happens is you will be making less estrogen, less progesterone, and again, it will have an impact on lots of other hormones. Mm. Now, we tend to focus on hot flushes as being a cardinal symptom of menopause.
It sounds, I mean, for some of my clients in my clinic, it's a very, very excruciating time.
Absolutely. But then there's lots of other symptoms that we don't talk about. So you will generally have slightly more irregular periods when you're perimenopausal.
Okay.
So when you first start having periods and when they're going to finish at the end of your reproductive life, that's when they'll be irregular. So they may also be heavier.
Okay.
So we see a lot of people coming to clinic super, super scared, worried that, you know, there's something really nasty going on because they're having these really heavy, maybe painful periods.
Yeah.
And obviously we will investigate and look for other causes, but a lot of the time it is just the perimenopause.
Right. So do periods get heavier as we age?
They can do, because if you're not having regular periods, that can be happening.
Mm.
The other thing I really want to mention is that you're particularly estrogen plays a big role in brain health.
Yes.
And so that's why a lot of people get problems with kind of brain fog. I'm not sure that's necessarily the best word, but I think people know what
loss
I mean.
Loss of concentration when, a bit there, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That can be a huge problem.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people now are talking about, you know, we need employers to be more aware of it. That, you know, it doesn't mean that someone's suddenly really crap at their job.
No.
Actually, maybe there's sort of a physiological reason for why they're like that. The other thing is headaches. I think that causes a lot of anxiety for women going through the menopause.
Headaches or migraines?
Yeah, so either.
Yeah. Okay.
It can be either. And particularly if you're... Some people can get headaches and migraines associated with their periods.
Yeah.
Because that's when you've got low estrogen at that time. And it's the same kind of thing in... particularly in the menopause. If you get kind of like an estrogen...
drop.
Deprivation headache, that can be a problem. And, you know, that I think we're all quite scared of bad headaches. You know, we think, oh God, is there something really nasty going on in my head? So that is another thing that I think
that
we
is
need to make people aware of.
Absolutely mind-blowing. And I think for so many people, actually knowing why they may be experiencing those headaches or migraines could be, like you said before, with the tracking app, very useful to help them be aware
exactly.
and realise. You've mentioned your contraception, well, the tracking app.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on increased other measures, so things like temperature tracking? There's a rise in all these alternative natural contraceptions. Are they valid?
So at the moment they're not recommended by the NHS because there isn't really enough evidence to back up their use.
Yes.
So I think there's one particular app that everyone's talking about a lot, although I've noticed not so many people talk about it on social media these
I
days
have
after
too.
It got in trouble with the Advertising Standards Agency.
I remember discussing that with you a year ago.
Yeah,
it must have been a year ago.
I was probably having a proper rant about it.
Yeah.
But what you do is you essentially help the app to learn your cycle and you take your temperature every single day to try and help it work out when you're ovulating. Because your temperature will slightly increase by about 0.3 degrees when you ovulate.
Very slight.
Exactly, very slight. Not enough that you would necessarily notice it, although some people can feel quite hot.
Hot sweats in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
I hear a lot of that. Is that very common around that time of month?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what you do is, you try and help it work out when you're ovulating, so you'll know when you're fertile. So you're fertile for 5 days before you ovulate, because that's how long sperm can live in the body. And then the egg can survive for 24 hours. So you have a six-day fertile window.
Wow.
And the only problem is, though, if the app gets it wrong, it will only know on the day that you ovulate. So it won't know. If you ovulated early, it won't know that for those 5 days before, you were fertile.
Of course.
So that's how the app can get it wrong. And the problem is that for a lot of us, the way that we live our lives is not going to lead to predictable ovulation necessarily.
No.
So all the factors that we talked about earlier, so training, eating, stress, sleep, travel as well.
Ooh.
Going out for a boozy night. All of these things.
What about, and so I heard smoking as well can contribute to things like even early menopause.
Yeah, definitely. Because smoking will have an impact on your hormones as well. I mean, that's
so many factors.
Something that could be taken into account. But so we just don't have enough independent data.
Mm.
All the data so far comes from the company who makes the app. So it's not necessarily the most reliable kind. So I think that we just have to be a little bit careful. And I think that I don't have any problem with people using those kind of apps.
No.
And I think they are quite good if you want to think about getting pregnant.
Yeah.
But I would just say I wouldn't recommend them to anyone who would be devastated if they got pregnant.
No.
That's
and
my kind
that's
of...
That's a good summary, I think, of that one, definitely, because I think it's very important. So we had lots of questions from followers for you as well. No, I don't think you've seen these.
Oh, I love a surprise.
There we go. So Zoe has said, what about detox teas?
Yeah.
Do they affect my cycle or my contraception?
So I don't think there's that much evidence that they necessarily affect your cycle.
Okay.
Although if you're really going for it, then you may be like washing out all your hormones. It would be pretty extreme. But they can affect contraception.
Ah.
So if you are using the pill.
Yeah.
So something oral, either kind of the pill, then it can stop it being absorbed, essentially. So
this is why we don't recommend these teas.
Exactly, because it's like giving yourself diarrhea.
Oh.
Because if you take the pill and you get diarrhea, you need to look at your pill's instructions, because all pills can be subtly different.
Yeah.
But you would need to follow that advice. So if you're having a detox tea, it's like putting yourself at risk of a potential pregnancy. So
Be
careful, people.
Thank you for clearing that one up. And Sandra has said, I hear a lot about pelvic floor exercises. Why should I be doing them?
Oh, well, there's lots of reasons.
Okay.
I think that people always talk about doing pelvic floor exercises for orgasm. Well, yes, that is one nice side effect, maybe. There is some evidence to show that doing pelvic floor exercises can help with that.
Yeah.
But the real reason is because we need to look after our bodies for the long term. And as we age, our pelvic floor will get weaker. So why is that a problem? Your pelvic floor is really important for urinary and fecal continence. Ooh. So being able to control your bladder and your bowels.
Mm.
It also is important for literally holding everything in. So I always think of it as like a trampoline.
Okay. Yeah.
And so if you jump too much on the trampoline, and
it's just going to go through the bottom.
Exactly. And so you can get prolapse. So you can have a prolapse of the bladder, the bowel, the womb itself, the walls of the vagina, all these things. And that can lead to lots of problems. So we should all be looking after our pelvic floors.
Yeah.
And my go-to resource for this is Squeezy app.
Squeezy.
So it's an NHS app. It will teach you how to do them. It can send you reminders. And I think for anyone who is vaguely thinking about it, which should be everyone, not just if you're pregnant or planning
Any age.
Any age. Ooh. Everyone should be
like training
about
in the gym, but training for down there.
So I do mine when I'm doing my cool down in the gym.
Okay. Right.
And so, yeah, big tip, really. Try and associate it with something you do every day so that you're like, okay, I'm doing that thing. Yep. I'm going to do my pelvic floor exercises.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I'm going to start on that. So we're now moving on to my favourite part in the podcast. This is a quickfire round called Fact or Fiction. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go. So exercising on your period is healthy.
Yes, fact.
Brilliant.
It can help with period pain and just generally helps you, I think, feel a bit mentally better. Don't feel like you have to do it, but it can definitely help.
Oh, that's so good to know. We should all be vaginal steaming.
Fiction.
Coconut oil treats thrush.
Interesting one. There is some evidence to show that in lab studies, coconut oil does actually kill candida.
That's
but
so
it
interesting.
Has quite a broad spectrum antibacterial effect. Yeah. So I am slightly concerned that it can also kill off the lactobacillus. So at the moment, it's not something that
and
I
would
And I
presume
necessarily
you
recommend.
Mean putting it on, not consuming it orally.
Yeah, putting it. I've seen people saying about putting it in their vagina. And also people saying use tampons soaked in coconut oil.
Oh.
Maybe in the future I'll change my mind. But at the moment, I need more data, please.
There we go. There we go. Heavy periods are unhealthy.
No. Fiction. Some people will unfortunately have heavy periods, but don't think it's something you have to put up with.
The pill causes cancer.
False.
Good.
Overall, there's a really good study by the Royal College of GPs, which shows that there is a slightly increased risk of breast and cervical cancer when you're using it. Disappears within 5 years of stopping. But the overall effect of cancer is actually beneficial because there are huge reductions in the risk of endometrial cancer, so lining of the womb, ovarian and colorectal. These are three huge killers of women, and the impact has been shown to extend more than 20 years after stopping. So overall, the net effect is actually protective.
Okay, that is very good to know. Veganism can stop periods.
It can, fact.
Women can't get pregnant past 40.
Fiction.
Less stress makes for easier conception.
Oh, fact.
This is brilliant. Sperm count declines with age.
Fact. It will do a little bit.
Something for the men too. Healthy fats are key for hormone production.
Yeah, fact. They're all made of fats. They're made of cholesterol.
That was a very decisive, brilliant fast fire round. Well done.
I don't know about quick fire. I did rant on about some of them.
No, we love the information on the Food for Thought podcast. And that nearly wraps up the episode. But with every guest, we finish with a Food for Thought.
Okay.
So mine today is that, as we've discussed, nutrition can play such an important role when it comes to various aspects of female health. And one example is, of course, folic acid, which is a water-soluble vitamin and can be found in many foods, including veggies, beans, legumes, poultry. It's also known as B9 and is responsible for forming our red blood cells and optimum nerve functioning. Now, the NHS suggests that women trying for a baby and those pregnant up to the 12th week should take the folic acid supplement. So in part of a kind of helpful campaign to reduce the risk of neural defects in babies. Also, I should add that when we hit menopause, our bone mass decreases too. So this is due to the loss of estrogen, as Anita explained earlier, in our system. And vitamin D is very important for bone health. And the government does recommend that throughout the kind of autumn and winter months, when it gets darker, we take about 10 micrograms. So lots of nutritional things there. And as always, if you are unsure about your health, please ensure you speak to a qualified health professional when making changes to your diet. And if you could leave our listeners, Anita, with your food for thought today, what would that be?
So my food for thought is just don't be scared to talk to your doctor about your health problems, because there are often things that we can do. And I would say as well that with regards to healthy diets, I totally promote healthy diets to my patients. But a healthy diet should always be something that's sustainable and nothing extreme. But also, don't feel that your diet is the cause of why you're doing something. I find a lot of people feel super guilty. Mm. I did a post about carbs and PCOS a while ago, and a surprising number of women were saying, thank you so much for saying this, because I felt really bad that I couldn't stick to a ketogenic diet.
Oh, that makes me so sad.
So I think that, you know, lifestyle is huge, and it has to be something that we promote alongside modern medicine. The two can definitely live in harmony together. So by all means, please do the things that you can for yourself. And the last four chapters of my book are actually all about lifestyle.
Yes.
But don't beat yourself up about it. Some things, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to necessarily completely negate or prevent with your healthy lifestyle.
Well, Anita, that was a lovely point to finish on. And where can everybody find you if they want to learn more or get your book?
So I'm at GynaeGeek on Instagram and Twitter, and GynaeGeek.com is my website. And yeah, my book is out on the 7th of March.
Which will be out by the time this airs, so go for it.
So available on Amazon and hopefully all
major
other
bookstores.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations. And thank you so much for coming on the Food for Thought podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. It's heartening to know there's such a craving to hear from expert voices in a world full of confusing nutritional advice. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll love what's coming next week, so click subscribe to be the first to hear it, and please do leave a 5-star review. It really does help get our podcast out there and hopefully help more people. For more information about my nutrition clinic, books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. A perfect diet is just a mirage that sets us all up to be disheartened. There is no such thing as the perfect anything. So find what works for you. That's the easiest way to maintain a healthy lifestyle. Mindful Chef has got it all covered, with the largest variety of vegan options for any UK recipe box and gluten and dairy-free options to choose from too. There really is something for everyone. To check out their recipes, head to mindfulchef.com/foodforthought, where you can get £20 off across your first two boxes and get a free cookbook written by the founders.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.